This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to Late Night here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Another decent start to the Major League Baseball season for your Minnesota Twins. But when it comes to Major League Baseball, one of the things that we love is just hanging out on a nice summer day and enjoying the baseball season and being outdoors and watching our favorite nine play. But also, one of the great things about Major League Baseball, there's so many amazing authors and writers and great books out there. And we're going to talk to a writer right now that does a phenomenal job of covering Major League Baseball. He's a national baseball writer for Bleacher Report. His name is Danny Knobler, and he's written a book called Unwritten: Bat Flips, The Fun Police, and Baseball's New Future. You can give him a follow on Twitter at Danny Knobler. Danny, we appreciate the time this evening.
Henry, good talking to you.
Hey, what got you excited about writing this book?
Well, I think the culture of baseball is so interesting. And one of the things that has struck me over the last few years is how that culture has evolved and developed, in partly because baseball has become a more global game than ever, partly because baseball, as always, has responded to changes in society. And when you walk into a ballpark, and especially when you walk into a clubhouse, you notice it's not the same. It's the same game, and you can recognize that. And there's some similarities that always will remain through the years, but there's differences. And why are those differences happening? What are they? And what can we learn about them? And that's what I set out to do. We talk about the unwritten rules, and we talk about why things are allowed in baseball and not allowed, even though they may or may not be in the rule book. And we talk about how that has changed through the years.
Was there any specific instance in baseball that really sparked your interest when it came to putting this book together?
I don't think there was one instance, but I think, like a lot of us, I've always been interested in knowing why disputes on the field happen. Why are two teams suddenly going at each other? Does one manager believe one thing and another manager believe something different? Why do one group of players act one way and another feel like they should be acting different? And over the course of time, I set out to talk to people about that and try to find out why that is and how it may evolve in the future.
One of the things that you address in your book is you talk about how baseball is in transition, analytics, technology, so on and so forth. As we look at the sport of baseball, we see technology and the new ways of approaching the game clashing with tradition and the unwritten rules. What's the clearest example of this to you?
Well, I think there's a lot of examples, but I think one of them that may be probably, and it's still an evolving thing, is how we view starting pitchers. And we saw that to a large extent last year, especially with the Tampa Bay Rays, but then with other teams trying similar things with openers. But even when you go beyond whether there's an opener or not, the idea was always in the past that the most important guy on every day was your starting pitcher. And for the most part, I think that is actually still true. But it's not nearly as true as it was before. And we saw it a couple weeks ago, and the game didn't turn out well for the Twins, the game against the New York Mets. But one of the interesting things that Rocco Baldelli said, the game where he pulled Jaco Odorizzi, probably as it ends up, too early, but that in the top of the fifth inning, he was ready to pinch hit for his starting pitcher while his starting pitcher was throwing a no-hitter. And had only thrown, I don't know how many pitches, it was a very small number of pitches. But that he believed so much in how you would, in what the numbers would tell him on when the pitcher should come out of the game, that he was willing to take out a pitcher who was, hadn't given up a hit and really hadn't really given him any reason to take him out at that time.
Danny, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because we had the post game that night on Final Pitch here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And I was scratching my head with that particular situation, because I turned to my producer, David Joseph, and I said, I don't understand this. Like, why was that a thought process in terms of even thinking of taking out a pitcher who at that point in time hadn't given up a hit? That was something that I'd never really seen before.
Yeah, very much so. I was on MLB Network on the MLB Now show with Brian Kenny the following day, and we talked about the decision. And not so much that he maybe thought about taking him out that early, but that he did take him out then in the bottom of the fifth inning. And at a point where he already had given up a hit and he'd walked a few, but it was still a questionable decision. And one of the numbers that they put up there, they put up what Odorizzi's numbers were the third time through the batting order. And that's become, I write about this in the book, that's become a big, big deal. The third time through the order, there's no question that starting pitchers as a whole, and sometimes even more so individuals in Odorizzi's case, that there's a big difference between how they pitch against hitters the first and second times they see them in a game to the third and subsequent times they see them in a game. And managers, led by front offices that are looking at numbers strongly, have become proactive about trying to decide when you should take a pitcher out, the idea being before he gets into trouble rather than after he gets into trouble. And I know Brian Kenny, who's a big believer in analytics, says many times on MLB Network, he says a pitcher is always cruising until he's not. And I understand that to a certain extent, but I also believe that a manager has to be able to use his eyes. And he has to understand the game. And he has to have enough flexibility to see where that pitcher is and to know where that pitcher is. And there are going to be games where you go against what the numbers tell you, and it's going to work. But at the same time, you can't ignore what the numbers are. You can't say, well, just because we never had numbers like these 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, we don't need them now. I do believe the numbers are important, but I also believe that the best teams and the best managers have a little flexibility in how to deal with them, because they have to make decisions based on the players they're dealing with and what their eyes tell them.
We're talking to Bleacher Report national baseball writer Danny Nobler here. He's got a new book called Unwritten Bat Flips, The Fun Police, and Baseball's New Future. We're talking to him on Late Night here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And speaking of bat flips, what was your take on the Chicago White Sox shortstop Tim Anderson and his bat flip against the Kansas City Royals yesterday?
It was an impressive flip, that's for sure.
It really was.
It was really impressive. And I don't have a problem with bat flips. I think my thinking has evolved on this. I wasn't as big a fan of them. I was never anti, but I was never as big a fan. I've come to believe, why not? They're fun, and I don't even mind the guys, some of them, who bat flip everything, guys who bat flip when they walk. I don't really care if that's what they do. I had an interesting talk last year near the end of the season with Chris Bryant of the Cubs. And I was talking about Javier Baez, and Brian is one who that he never bat flips no matter what. He can hit the ball 450 feet. He's not going to flip his bat. And one of the things Bryant said was, I like what Baez does because he's being himself. If I tried to be like him, then I wouldn't be, that's not my personality, and I'd be stepping out of it, and it wouldn't be genuine. What he does is genuine. What Chris Bryant does in not flipping his bat, same thing with, say, Aaron Judge, just putting the bat down and running around the bases, that's natural for them. And I do think the players have to be genuine. They have to be genuine, and there can't be any malice involved in it. One of the things when I saw Tim Anderson, I thought it was interesting, and I thought it was telling that when he flipped his bat, he flipped it right towards his own dugout.
Yep.
And it was showing his own team, look, we did something great, let's go. Now, I'm not terribly upset by the Royals' reaction. I don't think that's not how I would react to it, by throwing at him later in the game. But I understand. One of the things that I've told people about this book is the unwritten rules of the game, and a lot of parts of the game come down to how you feel about one word, and that word is respect. Pretty much everybody in baseball agrees that one of the most important things every player has to do is show respect for the game, respect for his opponent, respect for the uniform. Now, how he does that and what that word means, what it means to respect everything, is where all the disputes come. And the Royals obviously believed that flipping his bat in that circumstance, early in a game, not a game-winning hit, that was disrespectful. Tim Anderson, understandably, and I agree with him, didn't feel it was disrespectful. Well, if you do believe that, the age-old rule in baseball, unwritten rule, but age-old rule is you administer it, you tell it, you make your feelings known, and you don't throw it up near his head where you might risk danger to his life or limb.
Yep.
But hit him in the backside, which he did. He didn't hurt him. And in the old days, the idea was, well, when that happens, the hitter's supposed to understand why it happened and take his base and shut up.
I'm with you. Yep.
In the new days, that doesn't happen the same. And it's how the game is evolving. And people ask, is it ever going to go out of the game completely? I don't think it will. It's not as common as it once was, but I don't think it will ever, because there will always be disputes over what that word respect means.
Yep, I'm totally with you. And it's always interesting, especially right now, because when you talk about, you know, some of the Major League Baseball campaigns, they're talking about let the kids play. And when it comes to letting them play, I mean, everybody wants to see some of the guys have fun out there. We got a couple of minutes left here in the interview. And one thing that I wanted to ask you about was, you know, in a chapter about hustle, you quote Manny Machado, who said, "I'm not the type of player that's going to be Johnny Hustle." So here in Minnesota, we have Byron Buxton, and he's all hustle, and we see that every day from him. He beat out a grounder today that gave the Twins a run on a possible double play ball. How important is hustle in the game today, and why do so many players choose to not put forth the effort?
I think that's always been the case, that there always were some. I think we notice it more now. But I do think it's very important, and I think every manager, and I think most players, would prefer to see everybody hustle all the time. Over a course of 162 games, it's not realistic that every player is going to hustle all the time. And some players probably get more out of themselves by not doing it. And that sounds wrong, and it sounds like everybody should be able to run, and everybody says the thing you can always give is your effort. But I do think it is true that some players, it's just the way they play the game, they are better off. I don't know. I don't want to say better off, but they get more out of themselves when they concentrate on playing the game and having success. And maybe some days on some plays, that doesn't mean running full out. I think most of us would prefer to watch the guy who runs full out all the time.
No question about it. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Danny Knobler, and pick up his book, Unwritten, Bat Flips, The Fun Police, and Baseball's New Future. Hey, best of luck with the new book, and we appreciate the time tonight.
Thanks, Henry. I appreciate being with you.
All right, thanks to Danny for joining us. Check out his book, Bat Flips, The Fun Police, and Baseball's New Future. The title, Unwritten, that's from Danny Knobler and Bleacher Report. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk draft, because there's a position that I don't think that the Vikings need to address, but should it be off limits at all for the Vikings to even think about a quarterback? We get to that next year on Late Night. All right, back with you here on Late Night on News Talk 830 WCCO. Real quick, when it comes to the NFL draft is a week away. Like this time next Thursday night, we'll be talking NFL draft. We'll be talking about a draft pick. Where do the Vikings go, okay, in the first round? We'll be breaking it down next Thursday at this time. But when I think about the draft overall, because I don't know how everybody else feels, as much as I love the draft, I don't overdo it with the first round. And what I mean by that is I don't, like, you get one pick in the first round. The most exciting day to me is that Saturday when you've got the rest of the draft going. Because you got Thursday, then you got Friday, and then you got all day Saturday. And I'm intrigued at what teams do in the middle rounds. Like, that's where you really fill out your roster, right? That's where you fill out your roster. That's where you can get those, what do they call them, SOD, steal of the draft. That's what they called Ontario Smith years ago out of Oregon when he was here before he got caught up with the Wizinator, and then he was run out of town. But I love this Saturday. That's my favorite part of the draft is when you're going to see guys that you watched play college football each and every Saturday that they became named players, good players, the value picks, those that didn't go in the first couple of rounds of the draft, those that you say, you know what, he just needs to add this to his game, or he needs to do this, or he fell through the cracks here, or there's a question about an injury, or this guy failed a drug test, or whatever, you want to roll the dice. Those are the picks that I'm more interested in. But when you talk about the Vikings, and you think about what they need to shore up and what they need to add in the draft, should there be any conversation or any thought to the Vikings selecting a quarterback at some point next weekend? As I sit here and I think about it, I don't think so. But it comes up because a caller called in yesterday on late night, and they said, hey, you know what? The Vikings should think about drafting a quarterback at some point because how many more years are left in the contract for Kirk Cousins? He's got two. He's got 2 years left. He's got this season, then he's got next season. And then I think that Kirk Cousins is out of here. All right? So when do you start thinking about replacing Kirk Cousins? Now, clearly you're not drafting a quarterback with the 18th pick. All right? But should you think about a quarterback in the later rounds? Should you be thinking about somebody to develop to somebody that you should have as a backup? I don't necessarily think that it's something that you have to do. Now, if somebody falls, if there's somebody that you look at and you say, you know what, this guy's got some talent and he could be a good piece for the organization at some point, maybe within the next 3 or 4 years, then yeah, maybe you take a swing. And you go ahead and take a flyer on a player like that. But early on in the draft, I'm not in favor of them even thinking about a quarterback. And like I said, when we first started talking draft at the beginning of this week, the other position that I don't think you think about at all early is running back. You got good running backs, right? You got good running backs. And most notably, you got Dalvin Cook. That's your starting running back. I know Latavius Murray's gone and he signed elsewhere, but I think you're fine and you're solid with the running backs that you have. And I think that you're – look, the backup situation at quarterback, I'm not in love with, but I'm not in love with drafting a quarterback, okay? If you want to take a flyer on a quarterback maybe real late with one of your final couple of picks, then so be it. But going into this thing, I'm not thinking that you have to walk away with a quarterback because there's always going to be guys that are going undrafted, right? And you can grab a guy, bring him to, you know, to your organization, work him through training camp, and see what he has up, provide an offer. But for me, not going the other quarterback route. Quarterback, not necessarily, and neither am I doing that with running back. What we are doing, though, coming up next, is today's top story comes your way in 60 seconds here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Here we go. Back here on Late Night. News Talk 830 WCCO. When it comes to sports, we like, scratch that, forget about like, we love the majority of the time when athletes, when coaches are transparent. All right? Because a lot of fans, we say it often, right? We hate when coaches lie to us. Or when the athletes aren't telling us the truth. We don't want to be hoodwinked. We don't want to be bamboozled. We want to be told the truth. We want honesty. All right? We like when they are transparent with us. Okay? This next story, to me, is a clear example, though, of a coach giving fans and the general public just too much information. I can get behind folks being transparent, being honest, but there's also a point where you just don't want to say too much. Will you lose your fan base? Will you lose your loyal followers that you have? And the situation I speak of is Tennessee coach Rick Barnes, men's basketball coach, talking about the breaking point for him when it came to whether he would leave the University of Tennessee and take the UCLA job. Now, the UCLA job has been filled. Mick Cronin, the former basketball coach at the University of Cincinnati, he is the new UCLA coach. And Mick Cronin is a good coach. The expectations at UCLA, though, are just absurd. Like, I don't... UCLA fans, they think that they're somehow, some way going to get back to greatness. And when I mean greatness, I'm talking about, like, John Wooden. You're not going to get back to that. So you just need to chill out. You'll be lucky to get back to Ben Howland. Ben Howland went to two Final Fours, but he wasn't good enough for you guys. So y'all moved away from Ben Howland. Ben Howland was a good coach. Kevin Love, Russell Westbrook. Y'all went to some Final Fours, a couple of them, but he wasn't good enough. So Rick Barnes was at the top of the list for them. Tennessee had an amazing year this year. Number one team in the country for a while. This year it was between Tennessee and Duke when it comes to who was at the top of the list when it comes to weeks being number one. Tennessee, Duke, and Gonzaga. Those were the three teams. They were in conversation with Rick Barnes for him to be the coach at UCLA. It came down to money, not loyalty to the fans or the job itself. This is the quote from Rick Barnes, and this is the reason why if I was his agent, I would have said shut up. You're talking too much. TMI, too much information. I'm supposed to be at Tennessee, and it's really above and beyond the basketball program. I'm in love with this community. I'm in love with this state. I just think we got a lot of great things going on in this town. Now, that's what he should have said, okay? And he did say that. Those are his words. I'll repeat. He says, I'm supposed to be at Tennessee, and it's really above and beyond the basketball program. I'm in love with this community. I'm in love with this state. I just think we got a lot of great things going on in this town. That's what he said. He said that about Tennessee. But it doesn't jive. It doesn't mesh with something else he said in speaking with the media. What if UCLA had promised to pay Barnes's $5 million buyout? Well, he says, I think I would have been the coach at UCLA, he told reporters last Tuesday in Knoxville. I've said that to people before. I really felt at that time that's what would happen. I repeat, he stated when asked about the buyout situation, I think I would have been the coach at UCLA. Now, if you're a Tennessee fan, how does that hit your ear? Isn't that a slap in the face? We talk about being transparent and we talk about loyalty and all that stuff. If I'm a Vols fan or if I'm a player, I'm saying to myself, he doesn't love this university. He doesn't want to be here. He wants the money, but he doesn't really want to be here. And look, I get it. Anybody can be offered a ton of money and they bolt to a different situation. Okay? I'm not going to be silly here. If you're offered, everybody's got a number, right? Everybody's got a number. Heck, there's a number that could be offered right now to David Josephson if somebody says, hey, we'll pay you a couple $1 million to go produce this show in another country. I think DJ might leave.
See ya.
He's out of here. So we all have a number, right? But I don't see how this endears him to the fans. Like, he's saying this, and he stayed at Tennessee. How do the fans take this as anything other than, I stayed here because of school, I wanted to coach, just didn't have the money to pay for my contract buyout? Like, that's the translation here. He stayed because they wouldn't pay my buyout. Rival schools, they're going to use those quotes, right? His own words. They're going to use that in recruiting against him. I think so. And I'm not even sure if it affects him in recruiting. But if you're a Tennessee fan, how can you have hope that that guy is going to – that the guy that's changing your program around in a positive way is going to stay for the long haul? You have to think that the next time that his name is mentioned, is brought up, when it comes to a big-time job, that he's got to be gone, right? Right? He's got to be out of there. Because now we know what the buyout is, and whoever comes calling next, because there's probably going to be some other big-time jobs that will come up in the next couple of years, right? Indiana didn't make the tournament this year. Archie Miller is going to be on the hot seat soon if he doesn't get to the tournament next year. He's losing Romeo Langford, a kid that's projected to go in the NBA draft lottery. Indiana, they cannot stand it when they're not doing well. The expectations at that institution for basketball, big-time expectations. Bob Knight left some big shoes to fill. And quite frankly, I don't blame Indiana fans for expecting greatness. Indiana's got some damn good basketball players in that state. They got ballers. They got hoopers there. So they should have a great program. Just keeping kids in state. So if Rick Barnes, if Indiana comes calling for Rick Barnes, they know what the buyout situation is. It's just really hard to stomach if you're a Tennessee fan that essentially your coach comes out and says to the world, yeah, I would have took the UCLA job if they had paid $5 million for my buyout. But since they didn't, I'm going to stay here at Tennessee. I don't feel the love right there. That's not exhibiting love. That's not saying, you know what, I could have went to UCLA, but I really like what we're doing here at Tennessee. That's what you want to hear. That's what you want to hear. And I know money matters. It matters to everybody. We all got to earn dollars. We all want to feel respected and paid what we feel we're worth. But my goodness, fans don't like being disrespected. They really don't. But that's the deal. When it comes to college athletics, we can sit here and we can talk about contracts. Every single coach in college, football, basketball, whatever, they're all free agents. I don't care that a guy signed a 10-year deal. I don't care that a guy signed a 6 or 7 year deal. I don't care that a guy, doesn't matter. Those are year-to-year contracts. Because when an institution comes calling and they say, we want you here, they'll bolt in a heartbeat. They'll drop you like a bad habit. They will. Heck, a couple of years ago, Richard Pitino's name was floated out there for the Alabama job. Remember that? It went to Avery Johnson, but still, his name was floated out there. That's got to be the best thing in the world, right? When you're a college coach and you've had a good year and your name is floated out for a job, you know one of two things is going to happen. You're either going to get a raise from the institution you're at or you're going to get a new job with more money. That's what's going to happen. One of two things. You're going to go take that new job if you feel like you can win there and take the money, or you get the bonus, you get the added money at the place that you're at already. It's a great gig if you can get it. It really is. All right, coming up next, today's top headlines. That comes up next here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Back with you here on Lake Night on News Talk 830 WCCO. Before we get to today's top headlines, in about 40 minutes, not 40 minutes, in about 30 minutes, we're going to talk about Lindsey Whalen because the news broke today that she's going to have her jersey retired by the Minnesota Lynx. Imagine that. Just think about that for a second, DJ. That she's getting her jersey retired before Kevin Garnett gets his jersey retired with the Wolves.
Yeah, how about that? Well,
think about that for a second.
She's a bigger star in her league than he is in the NBA.
You talking about here, or are you talking about just in the league? Was Lindsey Whalen as big? And I'm the biggest Lindsey Whalen fan in the – I'm one of them, okay? I'm not going to say the – I'm not going to disparage – because I'm sure she got plenty of friends and family here in Minnesota. I'm a big-time Lindsey. Was she bigger in the WNBA than KG was in the NBA?
okay, I haven't done any research on this, but off the top of my head, I would think that Lindsey Wayland would be among the top 10 players in WNBA history.
Oh. Ooh.
You think that's true?
Ooh. I'm not sure about that.
25?
I think that that could
she
be.
She had a lot of success here with the championships.
No question about it. No question about it. I could see the top 25. The 10 is a little bit. That's tricky. And I say that's tricky. And if anybody wants to chime in on that, that's a good question. 651-989-9226. You got to think, man. There's been some really Cheryl Swoops. I mean, Lisa Leslie. I mean, there's been some goats.
But Kevin Garnett, I don't think, is in the top 25 in NBA history.
Oh, you can make that argument.
You think so?
Oh, man.
I would think he'd be in that next group outside of the 25. I'd have to look at a list, I guess. But this might be a talker for tomorrow.
Kevin Garnett's definitely top 50 of all time. Top 25, that's a tough one right there. We might have to get to this tomorrow. Because think of it like this. When it comes to players that went from high school to the NBA, who are the greatest ever? I think the three greatest ever, you could say, are Moses Malone. I'm not saying in any order, but Kobe Bryant, Kevin Garnett, and Moses Malone. No. LeBron James at the top of the list. He's the greatest to go from high school to the
But we're talking about best of all time through the history of the league. There's a lot of names that are decades ago you'd have to put on that list.
I don't know that I could say that Lindsey's top 10. That's tough. That's tough.
Either way, I would contend
she's amazing.
She's higher on that list in the WNBA than Kevin Garnett is in the NBA.
That's a good question. Maybe we'll have to dive into this as a topic tomorrow. I will say this about Lindsey Wayland. I think that Lindsey Wayland means more to Minnesota sports than Kevin Garnett ever will.
Yeah, because she stayed and she's had success in many different
at
areas.
At the U, yep. No, without question. She might be the most accomplished Minnesota sports
figure
ever.
I think it's
ever
almost a given that that's true in her sport. Yeah.
So she accomplished a lot. Anyway, let's get to today's top headlines.
All right. An investigation is underway after a man was shot and killed after he was fleeing police in Coon Rapids. This happened while we were on air last night, actually, 1:39 a.m. Thursday. An adult male stepped out of the car after a brief confrontation. The male took off and immediately pulled a handgun. Unfortunately, he was shot and killed by officers.
Wow. We will. I mean, what was he thinking? If indeed this is how it went down, mm-hmm. Okay? Because whenever I see stories, I'm not saying I'm skeptical, and I hate that I feel this way. But whenever you see these storylines, you don't want to run with it too quickly, because there are times where information comes out later and everything that you heard at first is not 100% accurate, or you get like the video footage from something. But if it played out the way it's described, what was he was going to pull out a handgun and shoot at a cop
and was also fleeing the scene. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Come on now.
Yeah.
That just makes no sense. That makes no sense at all. That makes no sense at all. And, you know, the thing that I never take for granted is the jobs that officers do and their lives being on the line 24/7. 24/7.
Yep.
You never do that.
Over in national news, the Justice Department today released most of the 400-page Mueller report that, of course, is reporting the findings of a possible collusion in regards to Trump and the election 4 years ago. And just 2 years ago in 2016. And that report is out. There is redactions to it. You can actually find the full version of that on our website, WCCORadio.com.
This is the one point that I'll make on this, because everybody has had a take about the Mueller report and about the Attorney General Barr's summary and all that stuff, and people talk about being exonerated and being guilty of obstruction of justice, laws, this is the bottom line to me, okay? It's as simple as this. It's very simple as this. Put the report out there and leave out the redactions. If you're exonerated, you're exonerated. Just let the report speak for itself, right? If we're going to claim that we're in the clear and nothing inappropriate has happened, then just put the report out there. That's all you got to do. And just let us see it for itself. That's all we got to do, as opposed to having to sift through it through somebody else's lens. That's all I would say about it.
In business news, actually some good news here on the business side. So back in 2017, there was some federal tax cuts that were passed, and those are finally getting back to consumers as Xcel Energy announces that they will pass on those tax cuts to consumers who
yes.
will receive a rebate. I don't know how that will get distributed, but apparently it's taken some time to figure that out. I would guess that would just be a kickback on your bill. But good
yes.
news for anyone who uses Xcel, you'll get a little something back.
That's awesome. Yes. Yes. Thank you. Props to Xcel. Because a lot of times companies don't always want to reveal all the stuff.
Yeah.
But props to them for being straightforward and being honest and saying, you know what, yeah, you got a little change coming your way.
Especially this time of year when we're all paying for the last few months of very cold weather.
Exactly.
finally, big changes at Minneapolis St. Paul Airport on the food scene.
Ike's is out.
Ike's has been there for quite a while, and they are closing in Terminal 1. And in is the Cook and the Ox that will open in Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport on August 1st. It's an upscale restaurant. It's offering a high-quality experience. They have dishes such as bison meatballs, walleye, and wild rice soup.
I don't know how you go about getting in and out of airports. I'm not an eater in the airport guy. I'm going to my particular gate, and I'm getting on my flight, and I'll have maybe a snack or something that I've packed, and that's about it for me. All that fancy stuff and the wine and the I'll leave it for other people.
I'm with you. The one point where I would say I would maybe do that if I had a layover somewhere, like in a few months, I got 3 hours in Atlanta.
Layover's different.
If I'm hungry and I want some in Atlanta, I'm going to be looking for a place like this. It's got some maybe Atlanta favorites.
I'm with you. I'm totally with you. All right, coming up next, we get back to Minnesota Twins baseball. They lost today 7-4 to Toronto. We dive into some of the highlights, and we get to that next year on Lake Night.